What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the big thing, Capes and Cowls. Going to be a very stacked show here today, ladies and gentlemen, as we are going to be talking about Henry Cavill. That's right. Henry Cavill is rumored for a Marvel role. We know that. Well, there's some rumors about what he could potentially be doing. And we'll go into this comic book movie story about some of the potential roles that they think he would fit well in. We'll see if we agree or disagree. The new Crow trailer just came out. We actually did a reaction to it, and we'll discuss it. Speaking of things that are coming out, the people are psyched about X-Men 97. All three of us have seen the first three episodes. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about the fact that the showrunner fired days before the premiere, and if that's going to affect the show moving forward. Someone's sticking up for Batman. There's some pushback on Zack Snyder's comments about Batman, and surprisingly enough, it's not Koi Gendre.
What?
Yeah, Venom 3 gets a title. This and more on the show here today. If you're brand new to the show and you've never been here before, do us a favor. Hit that button. Subscribe to the channel. We do a comic book movie news show, just the one we're doing right now, every Friday. We have other shows that we do. We do a live show on Monday. We have a UAP show on Tuesday. We do some stuff on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And out of the theater reactions, Winston and I did one of those last night for X-Men. Reviews, a lot of it. So we have so much. And if you do like the, or you're curious about the UAP phenomenon, UFOs, check out my new channel, Down Earth with Christian Harloff. We just hit 14,000 subscribers on that channel, and we do daily news every day. So we hope that you'll join us over there. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We do all that stuff. All right, it's Capes and Cowls, everybody. Let's do it. Here we go. Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Capes and Cowls. Christian Harloff, Koi Gendre, Winston A. Marshall.
To me, my X-Men.
And yeah, at first I was like, who are you, Cyclops? He's like, no, it's the long-haired Magneto. I love long-haired Magneto. Dude, love that hairdo.
Dude, it's It luxurious.
It's really, it really is elegant.
He looks like he smells like sandalwood. Just has an ambiance about him. It's just carries himself.
It's so good.
Sandalwood and cigars.
It's just got a vibe, man.
What I don't understand, though, I'll tell you this, is that you guys know me, more so than the three of us, I like to... politics and things of that nature. I hate when people are so blatant about it on Twitter and Instagram and on award ceremonies and everything too. But when I see someone go, well, the X-Men are too political and this X-Men series looks woke. I'm like, have you ever read an X-Men comic?
Real talk. The whole thing started off as...
They were the definition of woke.
which is funny, because that's not even what the... Anyway.
Yeah.
It started off as an allegory for the civil rights movement, and then it's further pushed into LGBTQ rights and everything else, and they've never hidden that.
It's always been there.
Ever.
The whole thing is like...
It's not subtle.
No, it's like we're different. We have to come out to our parents to let them know we're different. A lot of the parents are like, get them out of here. You take them. Mm-hmm. And all the shit that was going, it's like, what are you watching? It's like, cause I saw some, cause we talked about last night on our out of the theater reaction. I said, look, this sticks true to what the X-Men do. And it's this political, kind of commentary overall. And they stick to that. And someone goes, oh, politics, I'm out. I'm like, well,
they said that in the comment
in the comments. I'm like, look, it's one thing if someone does a Weekend at Bernie's remake, and it's like, dude, this whole thing is very, like, politically. Like, why? Why
Yeah, they make that Weekend at Bernie's? But if you make a political thriller and it's political, perhaps it wasn't for you.
Right. So that one I didn't understand. I didn't get that because
those people don't deserve art. Like, if you're that dumb, you don't deserve to be entertained.
Media literacy is at an all-time low.
Again, yeah, stupid people don't deserve nice things.
But I do think there's an argument sometimes. I'll tell you, sometimes when you're just like, oh, the politics on this, you're just going towards one lane.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about like the comprehension of the X-Men. You brought up politics, Chris.
I know. What I will say is this, though. I will say that there's sometimes, though, when people, and you see it a lot lately, that studios don't understand that you got to go to both sides of the aisle, and they have not been doing that recently. They've been going one side of the aisle. It's true, but when it comes to X-Men, it's always been this is what it is. So either way, let's start with that. We'll start with X-Men 97 because we're already there. All right, everybody. X-Men 97 gets glowing first reactions amid shocking showrunner firing. This is from Mark Cassidy over at Comic Book Movie. The first social media reactions to the 3-episode premiere of Marvel Studios' animated revival series X-Men 97 have been shared online following creator Bo DeMeo's recent firing. Marvel Studios' animated revival series X-Men 97 made headlines earlier this week after a somewhat shocking development, the firing of showrunner Bo DeMeo, just days away from the show's Disney Plus premiere on March 20th. DeMeo, who previously worked on Moon Knight, as well as early drafts of the upcoming Blade reboot, is said to have parted ways suddenly with Marvel last week. No reason for this falling out was given, but DeMeo's company email and Instagram have been deactivated, and cast and crew have been reportedly informed that he is no longer on the project. We still don't know exactly what led to him being taken off the project. There are rumors that it might have something to do with his OnlyFans account, but X-Men 97 is now back in the news for a more positive reason. Following the show's 3-episode premiere, critics have been sharing their first reactions to social media, and what sounds a little more like a few nitpicks aside, they are glowing. Jamie Jurak from Jamie Cinematic says, the first 3 episodes of X-Men 97 are epic. It exceeds expectations in every way. The nostalgia is strong, but it's just so much more. Beautiful animation, excellent storytelling, and above all, my favorite thing about the X-Men is the drama. James Whitbrook. Okay, now I can say that I've seen the first 3 episodes. It's on the whole good, a solid continuation, but that means it has a few of the show's stumbling points too. When it's great, and so far that it's more often than not, Scott fans will be feasting.
Everybody just loving on it.
The official synopsis says Storm and Wolverine try to continue the X-Men. Magneto comes in and wants to step up for Charles. Sinister comes in and try to end the X-Men once and for all. Okay, so we've all seen this. Okay, so you guys have watched the series lead. I know that you have for sure. You watched the entire lead up going up to you. Yeah. You watched. So I didn't
rewatch, but I've seen them.
You've seen them.
Yeah.
I rewatch it like every 18 months. So
I remember it. I think that you guys were kids when this thing was on, and I was like I was a teenager or little later. I don't know. When did it come out? 96?
No, 92 to 96.
92 to 96.
So I was like I was in high school. So you know, I was like, so when I noticed it was on, like I think my brother watched it, you know, and I would like notice it was on, and I was an X-Men comics fan, so I remember like if it was on and I tuned and I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, this is cool, and I always remember it. I remember that theme. Everybody remembers the theme, and so I didn't really remember enough the storylines. So when I was watching Winston would say, oh yeah, this happened in the finale of like season whatever it was, 5 or whatever, and very easy to catch up to, especially if you know the X-Men.
It felt approachable without
very much so. I loved this series. I loved the first 3 episodes that I saw because I'm an X-Men fan, right? It made me excited. Maybe what we were talking about,
just the feeling of talking about X-Men again.
Lead with X-Men. They got to be everywhere. They got to do. And I'll push back because I know that there's at least 10 of you that does this every time. So let's do it, Michael Keaton style, to Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'll tell you right, I'm gonna do it every time. The X-Men should have single movies leading to one X-Men event. Come on and disagree with me. I love when you do it because you're wrong. They should all have their own single movies, especially when you see the detail that Rogue has and Storm has, and they can all lead up in the same way that Captain America did and Tony did, and you lead up to a big X-Men event.
I would push back on that.
You're wrong.
No, but I'm gonna tell you why. I'll give you a better way to do that, because I think it's fine. You can fart all you want. You get some Beano. So I would say, like, with some of these characters, they're all very fleshed out in their lore and everything like else like that. I think what might be a little bit stronger is if you almost treat it kind of like if you do kind of like a mini series type situation where each one of them gets like a Werewolf by Night like length of their own
on TV.
Yeah.
Okay, you said that, but the problem is that that Disney's not doing that right now, and Disney wants to make money. And the other thing is the Marvels, and you get these movies, the Eternals, that no one gives a shit about. Mm-hmm. And when you have the X-Men, I would much rather see a Storm movie than I would the Marvels. I would much rather see, you know, a lot of these movies that are coming out, I would much rather see the because I know it's going to lead to an event that's not multiverse, that's not all this stuff.
Sure.
It leads to like a super team.
I'd say split the difference. I think there are some X-Men that deserve their own movie. Storm,
sure. Yeah.
Especially, because her cinematic backstory is like, why not?
Yeah.
Like we should have long ago. I think Cyclops, I think certain characters. I don't think if you have a 6 X-Men team, you need X-Men to be the 7th movie.
Sure.
But I think that somewhere in between, like you have maybe Cyclops and Jean have a love story.
Yeah. Well, look, Ant-Man didn't get a movie. until after the first Avengers.
So, but you know what I mean? Like, you, like, I would love to see something like a love story drama between Scott and Jean that, that then when we get the X-Men, we know them. A Storm gets their own movie, and then you get
to. If you're going to do that, because remember, they tried, Fox tried this previously when they were going to do all their X-Men origin movies, and it started with Wolverine, and it was so trash, they canceled Magneto and everything after it.
And
so
they put some of that into the First Class movie. They like gave him those three scenes that were going to be his whole movie, which shows how good that would have been.
Exactly. So if you're going to do that, then I don't really agree with anybody maybe other than Logan kind of having his solo whatever. I would say then pair them off. And if you're going to do it's Cyclops and Jean, and so how they ultimately met as part of that First Class, and you focus on them, so it is showing the old, the first beginning of it.
I think you could do Circus Life, Nightcrawler. I think you could do Thief into like Gambit.
You can make them smaller,
But like those movies are ready.
I guess that's what I was saying is if you pair them off like that, so then I know we already kind of got a Magneto and Charles story, but if you're redoing this for the MCU, you could do one with that and their friendship leading up to the split. You know, I guess you could do that, but like the idea of, for example, having a Jubilee movie.
I'm not saying, but that's not what I'm saying. I mean, more so like just like not every X-Men should have their own movie, but I mean, in the same way that if you're going to look at the way that they did leading in from phase one, is where Captain America, you know, Thor, they had a couple movies beforehand, and that led into a big event thing because I just don't want it's just they're pulling up these obscure characters in Marvel now and doing all these things that it's like there's no pure direction, and we were way off course. The point is that
show's
that,
great.
But it starts this conversation. It starts this conversation that show because it shows you how deep. Like this is a different storyline where you got long-haired Magneto coming back after the events of what happened with Charles, and he made a promise to his friends, so he's going to come back, but they got to trust him. And all the essence of the X-Men is there, like the stuff that you know about it. But there's like if you know, and even if you've just seen the movies, you can follow along with this because, like, oh, okay, well, that essence of what made Magneto special in the comics that transferred to the movies now transfers back to this show. And there's some really, you know, sci-fi stuff that plays into this, especially like the third episode. And you can either be really on board with it. I said it in our out of the theater reaction. There's a moment at one point you're like, well, they accepted that pretty quick, you know. But
30-minute runtime. Here we are.
Animated 30-minute run,
which was always the old show too.
Yeah,
The old show. They had so much lore and they did so many giant arcs. Like, I think it's just letting the audience trusting the audience.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think is improved upon in '97 from the OG part of the OG that a lot of people don't know because we were kids. And there have actually been a couple of like little documentaries that have come out on it is the amount of production woes that show faced because Fox didn't really believe in it and it was pitched multiple times and then they finally like kind of let it happen. But then there was a delay in animation. So you actually got episode 2 released before episode 1. And then you kind of had this back and forth, but you played the same 3 episodes for like 6 months before they eventually. And so because of that, there was a lot of disjointed kind of stuff going on. You couldn't fully get into it until we got deeper into the run of the series. Mm-hmm. And then you could really just kind of feast on it.
Right.
I think they did such a good job because you didn't have that issue of having each episode have its own specific storyline as we move forward as to what is going on with this team post Charles Xavier.
And I think someone else mentioned it in their review, but I like that only the first episode felt like it was just getting you back in. I was afraid that, and I enjoyed the first episode, but I was afraid the whole show would feel as nostalgic as the first episode. The show has lots of nostalgia as a character,
but it just throws you into the storyline.
And it doesn't weigh on it.
Right.
Sometimes nostalgia weighs on a show. Yeah. First episode, I was like, this feels a little too familiar, but then once you got into 2, 3, it moves.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that every iteration we've seen where we're being essentially introduced to the X-Men always starts with some young mutant on the run, like having to kind of deal with stuff.
You
and then here comes the team and they try and bring you in. Like every video game, this show started, the OG started with Jubilee. Yeah. I'm not going to give away what happens in this first episode, but you have a similar storyline there. The Fox movies, you started with Rogue on the Run.
Rogue was your eyeline.
So they use that as the starting point, and that's why I think it probably feels so much like an echo.
And it was great for one. Mm-hmm. I was just really, my whole concern about the show was when they called it X-Men 97, I was like, how much of this is going to be like, remember kids, like we didn't want to remember
a lot of people been, and a lot of people have been doing that lately with a lot, when it comes to nostalgia stuff.
Yeah.
And look, I didn't know about what was I was looking at it in fresh eyes, really.
Sure.
So I didn't know that,
that's why I was good to hear how approachable it is.
Yeah, like everything you said with the first episode, you're like, oh, this is memberberries. To me, it was like, oh, I guess I'm just catching up with stuff. And the one thing that I did is because I just know again from reading X-Men as a kid, knowing friends that worked on the movies and stuff too, there were certain things. Like at one point, I won't spoil it, but I was like, oh, that's so and so. And Winston's like, nice. And I was like, yeah, I knew that because
I was actually very impressed.
Because I knew it was once that I was like, oh yeah, that's right. That's so and so. I knew that from the lore. And I knew that in general, and I thought they played that really well. But what it did for me is that for someone who was like, oh, I'm curious because I like the X-Men, I'll watch the show. I don't know if I'll watch the whole series. I want to watch this entire series. So I thought the music was really good, and it felt this is a point that I definitely wanted to make here, is that we've talked about it how and to the exhaustion of the fans are like, stop talking about the budgets, which I heard you. But one of the things that I've always talked about is how I want to see like those A24 feel for like RoboCop or like Terminator and smaller budgets. And if you're going to do it like that, make it feel like it was made in 1984.
Yeah.
This show feels like it was made in 1997.
Yeah. But with like today's cinema angles and music.
Yes. Because it's like, use your tools that you have today.
Yeah.
But if you're going to tell me that it's X-Men 97, make me feel that it's the same animation. And it felt exactly the same.
I was afraid it'd be what if too much.
Yeah. Right? No, it felt like somebody was building a classic car and they did it, but they improved upon it with stuff that we have now.
Right.
I thought it was expertly done. I even like, again, for the people that are saying, you know, okay, this is too nostalgia, whatever. I think two of the really interesting things that they did to make sure it didn't feel fully like that is A, not a spoiler in the sense that people know Jubilee's in it. Jubilee, now having been the young one that came in with this new mutant that comes in, she ends up being, it's this, it's that. Right. Like, I've been in your shoes.
Right.
As well as then what the ending of that episode ends up being.
Yeah.
It really just kind of takes off from there. So where you think you know where this is going, you have zero idea.
Is the rest of the series, the first five series, is that on Disney Plus right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I probably, what it did, and it's probably going to do this to a lot of people, I want to go back and watch now.
I was going to say my two favorite elements of this are what we talked about with getting the X-Men back in the conversation and having people go back and like make that thing, but also the show doesn't feel like other Marvel shows in that a lot of other Marvel shows have some drama and gossip, but overall they're, you know, telling a narrative and overarching story and there's lots of action. This has plenty of action, but X-Men are dramatic.
Yes.
They're super gossipy.
Like
the X-Men are like, it's a soap opera with action.
100%. This feels like a soap opera with action.
And it's funny
not
too,
action with a soap opera.
Yeah. And there's some funny moments. So
yeah. It's definitely hilarious.
There's a really funny moment. What's it? Morph?
Yeah.
There's a funny thing with that Morph does to Cyclops is what I'll say. Like in the third episode. It's hilarious. Not Cyclops, Gambit.
Yeah.
The first episode is Cyclops. Yeah, but
that's
the Cyclops. It's the Gambit. In the third episode, that is hilarious.
It's really good. Honestly, I think this is the show that's made me smile the biggest and most of any of the shows.
The Marvel stuff.
I love, you know, you guys know how much I love Loki and WandaVision and the good ones, but they're definitely they're a different thing because like they're
they did X-Men right. You love the X-Men.
And it's mixing nostalgia with my modern love of them.
Right.
It's this perfect blend of like, I'm so happy and my inner child.
Yeah.
I haven't been this excited about any comic book media, I would say, since No Way Home.
Right.
And I loved Wakanda Forever. I loved Guardians. I love Spider-Verse. There was, and I absolutely adored Spider-Verse. I know for you that it's like top tier, probably your best comic book movie ever. There was something very just, I guess, specific for No Way Home and I guess maybe it's because I also know it's not MCU.
Mm.
So I think specifically knowing we've been so scared about what's happening with the MCU, and I know it's not a direct tie-in to the MCU, but it is the same camp, I guess, that they're, it feels like if this is the start of writing the ship to go from this to Deadpool, everybody's going to feel a little bit better about where we're going.
Sure, but that does bring us to the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And so, Bo was fired.
Fire.
Now, this guy wrote the majority of the first two seasons, or new seasons, rather. And then he was just abruptly fired. We were kind of going over a text thread, and as I've been saying lately, something stinks in Denver.
Denver.
That's what it is.
Close. Instead of Denmark?
No, I say Denver. I've been saying, this is an ongoing joke what we've been saying on with me and Mike, but yeah, something stinks in Denver.
Russell Wilson?
Yeah. Oh. So,
that's why I go.
But either way, this isn't them saying, oh, well, we don't really like what you did, clearly.
Yeah.
All the reviews and everything. This is something happened.
It's so interesting how little we know.
We'll learn a lot.
Oh, yeah,
more.
Yeah.
This, you can't keep this quiet. People are going to be. You already see Jeff Snyder sniffing around. Like, someone's going to find out some. This report's going to come out. I don't buy the OnlyFans thing.
He's been on that, I thought, since the show was in development.
Yeah.
I don't know when he signed up, but that seemed public.
Based off of everything I was seeing, because there were reports of what his OnlyFans was, it wasn't anything explicit. Right. It was just something that he was almost using similar to a Patreon, except he was using it to cover LGBTQ news, him being a queer man himself.
Yeah.
But there is, yes, there the streets are hot.
What Koi says, though, it's like because I saw someone go, we talked about it the other day, I was like, they're not going to get rid of someone for the OnlyFans. Like, oh, you don't know practice and standards. They can get rid of someone right away. I'm like, but you don't think Disney, right? You don't think Disney's going to, before when you hire someone, the first thing you do is you go. When we were hiring somebody, really look at their Twitter. How bad is their Twitter? What have they done on Twitter? This is, you look, and it's like, well, he's got an OnlyFans account. Yeah, but that's his own personal thing. Let's bring him on. That's what happened. Something else happened.
I think that Disney wouldn't be stupid enough, knowing all of the backlash that happened with the Gunn situation, then having to rehire Gunn and everything else. I think that was a lesson learned.
Right.
Where, like, if there is something that had happened before we hired you, they have actually done their work now to deep dive. So something has to have happened in present time for sure.
And something bad enough that they're willing to have this press the week of their X-Men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's crazy, is it's now. I mean, Marvel is going through all this, like, hey, things aren't as bad as you think they are, because it's a very vocal internet contingent. I don't know how much the regular world sees other, things, the high, the up and downs, but we're the same people that are going to be talking about this firing.
Right.
The same people that are having the conversation of, like, what's going on with Marvel are now like, what's going on? So something must have been big enough to allow this to come out this week.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just think it's you can't keep a lid on a story like this. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll rear its ugly head, potentially, depending on what it is. But it goes back to what you said. He was all over this thing. Like, he was all over this thing, and he seems to really understand the X-Men. So
that makes me nervous.
Right.
Because if I remember correctly, Cole, you might know better, I believe they've already said that this is getting 2 to 3 seasons.
I think season 2 is written already.
And then three is approved, but they haven't.
Exactly.
So, like, what concerns me in that regard is he wrote the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say he also wrote episode 2, but I could be wrong. But again, he's the showrunner of the show. And the one thing that I know about a lot of shows, if the showrunner is that integral to the show, when you just drop them, a lot of times you lose the soul of it, and that can get really scary. So, like, Community was never the same once Dan Harmon left. That's why they had to bring him back in. The Boondocks, I love that show to the ends of the earth.
Dexter's
another one. Example. Aaron Magruder left Boondocks at the end of 3-4 was trash. Right. Dexter, when did the showrunner leave that?
4 after 4.
And
came back for the final season.
And that was the Julia Stiles season, wasn't it? Because the Trinity Killer was season 4, wasn't it?
Yeah, so after he didn't work on the Julia Stiles season.
Right. That's when he left. So it's one of those situations where I am very concerned that if that's the case, we might get 2 great seasons and then it might go off a cliff.
But to also be fair, there could be people that worked with him that understood it just as well, that helped.
Yeah, there's a lot of writers on it. And I know 2 of them, they're fantastic writers that really love the source
material.
Really, it's just what do you do with the position of power? Like, do you hire another showrunner? Do you upgrade one of the writers?
Right.
Do you, like, that? That becomes a question.
Yeah. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Let me know your thoughts about all of this. First of all, are you excited about the series? Do you think it's going to work? Are you excited about it? Comment, and obviously weigh in on the controversy also. Do you think that this will be something that they can move forward with past the showrunner? Comment, let me know. Now, before we move on, I want to tell you guys we're always excited to have sponsors that you guys are enjoying, and we've been getting some really great ones, and I want to tell you about 2 more right now. You guys know I love AG1, and you know that I love Factor, so I'm going to tell you about both of them right now. Excited to talk to you guys about Factor, man. You know, it's not always easy to eat better, but it is with Factor. Because they have delicious, ready-to-eat meals. It's every one of them. It's fresh. It's never frozen. It is chef-crafted. It's dietitian-approved. And it's ready to go. This is the best part. 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from each week, whether it's Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, all of it. And there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day. What are you waiting for? Two-minute meals. And there's a lot of great stuff. Pancakes, smoothies. There's no prep. There's no mess meals. It's flexible for your schedule. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. You just sign up and you save. You head to factormeals.com/bigthing50, but you got to use that code, bigthing50. And what happens when you use bigthing50? You get 50% off. That's bigthing50 at factormeals.com/bigthing50. And you get 50% off. All right, guys. Let's talk about AG1. You guys know I love AG1. If you've been listening to my show, you've heard me talk about them, and I've been drinking them for about 2 years now, and I love it. Never been a vitamins guy. I've told you that. I take it all one shot, AG1. I put it in a water bottle. I shake it up. I'm good to go. I recommend AG1 to my friends. I recommend AG1 to my family, everybody. AG1 is a team of doctors and scientists. It is tested for 950 contaminants and NSF certified for sport. It is formulated based on the latest science and maintains high quality standards. You guys know they've been with us for a while because you guys know too. You've all been checking them out, and everybody who's been signing up to AG1 says the same thing. It's changed your energy. It's changed how you approach things in the day. You're smiling more. Running around the place and you're sleeping better. I know. AG1 is the supplement that I trust to provide the support my body needs daily. And that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and you get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/bigthing. Drinkag1.com/bigthing. Check it out. All right, thank you to our friends over at AG1 and Factor. I have been very grateful to those of you who have reached out to me, and I've seen whether it was on Instagram or Twitter telling me that you, or YouTube comments telling me that you have gotten both AG1 and Factor and you're enjoying them. So thank you. Please do that. I always love hearing it. I want to hear what you guys think. So links in the description. It's always pinned to the top comment. All right, MCU rumor roundup. These are updates on Eternals 2, Henry Cavill's role, and possible spoilers. So this is from Mark Cassidy, comic book movie. It's a big night for the MCU-related rumors with several different scoopers, some with better track records than others, sharing updates on various projects. Going to start with the reliable Daniel Rickman, who is claiming that the quality-over-quantity approach Marvel Studios adapted after the underperformance of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and the Marvels has led to the planned Eternal sequel being shelved for the time being. The studio is said to be putting all focus on guaranteed hits, whatever that means, which means we more than likely won't see a fourth Ant-Man or direct follow-up to the Marvels. No surprise there. Now, on to Venom, The Last Dance, and while the threequel will indeed be the final solo outing for Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock, Richman has heard that Feige is open to having the Lethal Protector in the MCU proper for a potential face-off with Tom Holland's Spider-Man. As for the upcoming Blade reboot, Can We Get Some Toast is reporting that the movie is currently being retooled by writer Michael Green and will no longer be a period piece. Filming is expected to take place in the UK. My Time to Shine Hello, meanwhile, believes that Barbie and the Fall Guy Ryan Gosling has accepted a role in the MCU. If accurate, we're not sure what he'll be playing, but there is speculation. It could be either Nova or Doctor Doom. The Fantastic Four script has been compared to Little Women. She didn't elaborate, but we assume it's because both movies follow characters over two time periods. Recent rumors have claimed that the former Man of Steel, Henry Cavill, has joined the MCU in an undisclosed role. And Giant Freaking Robot believes they know what character he'll play. All right, this is going to be a potential spoiler, so if you don't want to hear what he might play, move along. According to the site, Cavill will play a multiverse variant of Logan in Deadpool and Wolverine. We don't have much to go on there, but the Mission Impossible Fallout actor will reportedly be wearing a long brown coat when he shows up. How much stock should we play in this? The site has definitely had a few scoops that have panned out in the past, but just as many that have been nonsense, so it's difficult to know. If Cavill did sign on with Marvel, we find it hard to believe that it would be for a one-and-done cameo, so perhaps there are plans to bring the actor back in a different character down the line. All right, so let's move on to the next story. I want to talk a little bit about some of the upcoming MCU rumors, one concerning Henry Cavill, one concerning Fantastic Four, a couple other ones. Here we go. All right, so you guys, you hear all of those rumors. You hear all that stuff. Corey, let's start with you, man. Out of all, everything that I just read there, what stands out to you?
Baby Goose, man. I want Ryan Gosling in the MCU so bad. It's been talked about for like 5 years. Yeah. I think he's one of the last like movie stars.
Yeah.
He can do everything. And I think you want someone that is bankable, that is versatile, that carries a movie, that is a big enough above the line actor that you can have a character and an actor both be big enough that Marvel gets that, you know, huge surge they need. I'd love to see him as a Cyclops. I'd love to see him in like a big commanding role. My buddy Yuri sees him as Longshot, which I think would be hilarious.
That would actually be really
He'd be perfect. I just don't know if that character would be as big
as... Yeah, I don't know what
that is. Longshot's a guy that kind of... He's kind of like Black Cat. He plays with luck. So he's a character that his power is making long shots happen. So he's...
I thought that's more of a domino thing. Black Cat... I thought Black Cat's whole thing is that more... I thought Black Cat's thing, and maybe this is where the Spider-Man the animated series is throwing me off. That she has like some her own version of the Super Soldier Serum, and that's what.
No, that's only the animated series. In the movie, I mean, in the comics, she basically around her bad luck happens to everyone but her. So it's like the inverse of
Domino.
But I see, you know, like a long shot visually dynamic and perfect, especially with his current hair. But I'd love to see him in like a Cyclops role. I think Gosling is. He's the right age for his kids to care enough that he might do it.
Well, he's like what? He's got to be close to 40 now?
I think he's early 40s.
Is he? Okay. So he could, if you have Pedro Pascal, who's 46, 47, he could play Doom.
Yeah, but I don't like that casting.
No?
I really... He has
no Paul Giamatti.
We've seen, sure, but that's a whole different reason why I said that. I just after what I've heard about the Fall Guy, and I've heard that he crushes that. What he did in Barbie, and especially that performance of I'm Just Ken and all that, and he just gives off that particular vibe. It doesn't mean that he couldn't play a villain.
100% could.
There's just different villains that you could give him that charisma. Doom isn't charismatic in the way that Ryan Gosling is. Doom is very about his business and very command. That's why we kept saying Cavill. There's that thing about Cavill that I think would be really good. And I hate the idea of Cavill as Logan because not that he couldn't give you that gruff thing that you're looking for, but I agree with a lot of people that feel some type of way that, like, look, if a super tall person is just going to be the person to be Logan, fine. But there is something specific about Wolverine being a shorty, and that Sabretooth is way above him, and that's his main rival.
I hate that Wolverine rumor. I hate that Wolverine rumor.
I don't like that. Edgerton. I still think that he would be, Taron Egerton would be better.
Totally. But Taron Egerton, well, this is just seems like this is going to be like
a one-off,
which Cameo. I think is,
I agree with him.
That's what I'm saying. I agree with
Cameo. Unless that's all that Cavill wants to do. I can't imagine Cavill wants to sign on for another 10 years of dealing with fans.
I don't think he has a problem with the fans, dude, as much. I think it's for him, he had a lot of support from the fans.
Oh, no, the fans love him. I just mean, like, do you want your lifestyle to be only comic book movies?
I know. I think it's more so the fact that, like, he has been working for the studio system. That's one thing.
I mean, like, the weight of it. I'm not saying he doesn't like the fans. He loves the fans, and he's a nerd. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying, does he want to pivot from 15 years in one house to the next 10 years in another house?
Sure.
And the weight of being stuck there.
Yeah.
I don't mean the fans as in they're the problem. I mean, like, his life becomes that again.
Right. What are you going to say?
Well, you got? One, if you're going to pick him to be any sort of regenerating whatever, I can't believe I just missed what I said. You could make him Sabretooth, and I think that would actually be a pretty good cast.
Yeah, that would be good.
And then the other thing that I thought about, if you really want to use Gosling, I actually think, again, tied to X-Men, you could make him Mr. Sinister, and he would crush He would absolutely crush Sinister.
Yes, he would.
The only problem with putting him in the X-Men right now is that when do you want to use him? Do you want to use Ryan Gosling to help sell the Fantastic Four? Do you want to use Ryan Gosling in before the Avengers? Or you want to say, no, we got him signed on, but you're not going to see him until like 2027 in a Marvel movie.
I think Gosling could absolutely do the Doom thing and be great, but Doom is, it's funny to laugh at Doom yelling in all caps. Like when you see Doom, it's funny in a non-charming way. And Gosling is so good at being charming, I think he would be a bit wasted in Fantastic Four. So I see, you know, while he's the hottest out he's been using him, but I think it'd be better to use him for a character that's better suited for him. And Marvel's good at casting long-term.
Yeah.
So I honestly, like, I love your Sinister pick.
Dude, I think
And they might do Sinister for the first X-Men movie. They set him up five times.
Do something new. Don't automatically jump back into the whole Magneto thing all over again. On top of the fact that, like, the more I think about Doom, if I was going to kind of blend him between like two movie characters that come to mind, it would be a mix of like Agent Smith and then like Candy from Leonardo's Candy from Django. Thank you. It's the insanity that Leo shows when he like had the blood on his hand and all that kind of stuff, but then also the cold, calculated nature of Smith and putting he can be either one of those. I'm not saying that Ryan Gosling and Henry Cavill don't. I think Henry would probably be a little closer to it. I'm not saying that Ryan doesn't have the chops to do it. It's just not necessarily what he oozes charisma, which is why Sinister for me, that's I feel like would be a great
pull.
Pick.
And I like your Sabretooth pull too. I want someone like giant and beastly, and Henry Cavill's huge.
It'd be great.
Alan Rickman, I guess, if you're not going to do Cavill.
Oh, dude, dream.
Yeah, I think that's one
Richardson.
Of the. Yeah,
Rickman passed away.
Yeah.
Rickman, I'm because of the news reporter. That's what.
Right. I think that. Look, there's a lot of stuff that they are saying. Even though one of the rumors in the beginning of it is that Marvel is looking to do just guaranteed hits, and I said whatever that means because you can't ever like do what a guarantee.
Such a dumb. Phase one was like, let's have a C-list character, a D-list character,
right.
A B-list.
There's no
like,
guaranteed hit. No matter what. I mean, like Avatar 3, right? Is not a guaranteed.
If it's real bad,
it's not a guaranteed hit. It's going to be a massive success.
Yeah.
But it's not. Nothing's guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed.
It's true. The only reason, though, I understand why they're coming at it in that particular way. And I know we
less
all
risk.
Get that.
Less risk is a name.
Less risk would have been the better way to go with it. But I think the other thing we have to remember is in how ridiculous dire straits like Marvel was when Iron Man happened and they went out on that plan. You move so differently than when you're like dirt poor to like I'm super rich to now I've lost my fortune. How do I build it back up? Yeah. You're a very different type of person than when I've never had anything. So I don't think you can go and try and replicate phase one. That's not something you can do, but you can see why that worked and see the clout that you have and come up with a new solution. Right. And I guess it's one of those things we see a lot of times with like musicians. That debut album is incredible. The sophomore slump kind of kicks in. And then it's like, how do you recapture the artistry that brings you back to it? That's what I need to see out of Marvel right now. And I think that that's what they're trying to say is, what is it that made us special?
Sure. I get what they were going for.
It's just bad wording.
Yeah, it's just if for Marvel to say we're only going for guaranteed hits. I'm like, I mean, yeah, that's what every studio goes for is guaranteed hits. But I understand their approach is right. It's like, let's go for more recognizable stuff. Let's stop just putting out everything. Let's stop putting out they got into a place because they were hit after hit after hit. Well, look, everyone uses Guardians as the example. Well, nobody knew Guardians, and Guardians was a massive hit.
You were rich then.
And it was a different phase. It was, and the trust was a lot different with the fans back then.
It is 1,000% that same adage I was using with the musician would have, at that point, you've earned so much clout that it's like, I'll listen to your experimental album. Wow, that was actually pretty good.
Right. Well, staying with the Cavill part of it, that Comic Book Movie actually did a little bit of a list of certain characters, and there's going to be some characters, I'm sure, in this list that I don't know what the hell it is, but that's why you guys are here, to tell me if you agree or disagree. We've done this before with Comic Book Movie, and here is the list. All right, Comic Book Movie. This is from Josh Wilding. Rumors that Henry Cavill might join the MCU have persisted for several years. However, it was last night that we learned that the former Superman is supposedly being lined up to play a Wolverine variant in Deadpool Wolverine. But after he was fired by DC and James Gunn following him, I don't know if he was fired. This wasn't brought back. It's not fired. Anyway, Cavill deserves another shot at being a superhero or a supervillain for that matter. Beyond playing Superman, Cavill has proven himself as an actor capable of playing all manner of characters on screen. So these are the suggestions for a comic movie. The first, whoever this is
Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill. Okay, it looks like a guy with a horse head. What is this? Created by Walt Simonson. He's a Corbinite and a member of an alien race whose planet was destroyed by Surtur. I'm bored already. Chosen by his people to wield the Stormbreaker. He lives to Thor's hammer. No.
One of the most iconic characters in Thor. You're like, I'm good. Thanks.
Silver Surfer. Okay, now I know who that is.
I don't hate that.
All right, Silver Surfer is an example, and we know who Silver Surfer is. Now, for now, it appears that Silver Surfer won't join Galactus in the Fantastic Four reboot. Instead, the Devourer of Worlds will be joined by another Herald, with the door left open for Norrin Rad to make an appearance. Okay, next one, Beast. That's interesting. So they're not going to go
just because his name is Henry.
They're not going to go back with Kelsey Grammer. So the rumor Mill may have churned up some wild claims about Cavill playing Wolverine, but there's another member that we think he'd be a better fit for. Yes, we're talking about the one and only Dr. Henry Hank McCoy. This won't work if Marvel Studios decides to introduce the mutant team as teens, but if they're already established as heroes after Avengers Secret Wars, then we think it'd be a perfect fit. Okay. This is number two, Dr. Doom. This is my pick. This is the one that I want. Mm-hmm. Dr. Doom is rumored to make his MCU debut post-credit scene, presumably meaning the actor cast as the villain will only need to lend their voice to the character for the time being. We'll eventually get to see what lies beneath the mask, of course, and Havel going to toe-to-toe with Pedro Pascal's Mr. Fantastic is exciting. Last one, number one, Captain Britain. This is the one that everybody has been talking about. So I don't know enough about Captain Britain, but we know this is predictable, but damn it, we don't care. Cavill will be perfect, helping to ensure this superhero feels believable and every bit as crucial to the MCU. Okay, so I like most of those. I agree that I don't know enough about Captain Britain, but even Henry Cavill himself said that'd be like kind of the one that is the most obvious. Dr. Doom is the one that I would love. That's the one I've been calling for like years now at this point. I like the choice of the Beast. I think that's an interesting choice, and I think that Henry Cavill could absolutely. I could see him holding a clipboard and having that conversation like all dressed in blue. I could absolutely see it. I don't know who that first person is. I don't care.
Beta Ray Bill.
He's like a Thor from another planet. He's no, he's someone like fighting for the same.
No, he doesn't care. I'm done.
He's like, he has a horse face. I don't want a horse face. Yeah.
If we're going with those, I would say probably Doom is my one and Beast would be my two. And,
yeah.
And then Britain three.
Yeah, same.
Surfer 4 and Beta Ray Bill 5. I think specifically the one thing I will give him for Beast, and that's maybe part of the reason why I was leaning so hard into Doom, the fact that we got a behind the scenes of Cavill after, like, I want to say Man of Steel or Batman v Superman, where like ladies were losing their minds. Yeah. It's like, oh, I like to build computers on my spare time. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh my God.
Big nerd. Yeah. Do you know who he was a massive fan of? Schnapp.
Yeah.
He was a massive fan.
I didn't know that.
He loved Schnapp.
Yeah.
He loved Schnapp. Yeah.
But that's how plugged in he was, that he was like internet awares.
He knew. I love that. Yeah, he actually, when Schnapp passed away, he did a post about him. I don't even know if they even really met each other too much, but he was just a fan of Schnapp.
Wow.
I love Cavill for that.
Yeah.
But I think to that point, he could both give you the bestial side of Beast, but he can tap into that nerd element clearly. And I think that would be great. But that's also why I think he'd be so great for Doom. We saw him in Mission Impossible and how he can bring you that big bad as much as he needs to. And you're just giving him a different flavor of that type of villain. So
I don't know how well they'd do a Captain Britain. Like,
Is Captain Britain a bad guy?
You want him as a bad guy? You're like, Henry Cavill, bad guy. I just don't know if they'd do Excalibur. I don't know if they'd dive into, like, if Guy Ritchie wanted to do Excalibur, I'd be interested. Like, if someone that loves making the British texture and flavor have that punchiness.
Yeah.
But if it was just like Captain America, but Britain, I'm like not as invested.
But it's also the same. The conversation that we just had. One, is Captain Britain enough of the guaranteed hit, right?
That's a funny part.
That's one part of it. The other thing is, like, if so, if they just bring him on to do a Captain Britain thing, when does that movie come out?
Right.
Right? Dr. Doom, you're going to see him soon, right? Silver Surfer, you'll probably see him soon. Beast, you'll see him soon enough. Those are the three out of those that are like, okay, that's more realistic as far as, well, you want to place him in there and get some star power in there and put a little bit more oomph to it. I still think Dr. Doom is the way to go. I think that he's imposing. I think that the fact that you could use his voice for a little bit. And then when it comes down to when you imagine that reveal in Secret Wars or whatever, when he takes the mask off and it's Henry Cavill, the place goes crazy.
And like the intensity in his eyes, I think you need someone that also has that gaze. And that's one of the reasons I do like the Cillian Murphy room, right? There's a lot of reasons I don't, because it's the stature and certain things, but like the intense gaze through the mask, I think, is so essential. Sure. Like that, like condescending. And I feel like Henry Cavill would be fun to see him play that. I think he'd enjoy it.
And
the language of Beast would be great. I really think that Cavill being such a like computer building Warcraft like purveying nerd, it would be great to hear him get to like show that side of himself that he only really shows in interviews, because you see him in interviews, like someone's talking about nerdery, he perks up and he's attentive, and you don't get to see that in he's like Lothario romance cover roles.
Right.
So I'd like to see Beast. I think Doom's my one, Beast is my two. I don't love the Silver Surfer just because I see him as a lot more stoic, and I've always seen more of like a Keanu Reeves like wistful type, like someone that like kind of just like flows, and Cavill's intense, whereas To me, the Surfer is an observer, and Cavill seems to be someone that is engaged.
Engaged. Okay. Well, out of all that, where do you guys go with Cavill? What do you want to see? Put your comments in there. Let us know. Before we get to, we have just two more stories left. Before we get to both of them, I want to tell you guys both about Robin Hood and Mando. Let me tell you about both of them right now.
I'll tell you about Robin Hood. This is a new one.
So did you guys know that even if you have a 401k for retirement, that you can still have an IRA? Robin Hood has the only IRA that gives you a 3% boost on every dollar you contribute when you subscribe on Robin Hood Gold. But get this. Now, through April 30th, Robinhood is even boosting every single dollar you transfer in from other retirement accounts with a 3% match. And that's right, no cap on the 3% match. Robinhood Gold gets you the most for your retirement thanks to their IRA with a 3% match. This offer is good through April 30th. Get started at Robinhood.com/boost. Subscription fees apply. And now for some legal info. Claims as of Q1 2024, validated by Radius Global Market Research. Investing involves risk, including loss. Limitations apply to IRAs and 401ks. 3% match requires Robinhood Gold for 1 year from the date of first 3% match. Must keep Robinhood IRA for 5 years. 3% matching on transfers is subject to specific terms and conditions. Robinhood IRA available to U.S. customers in good standing. Robinhood Financial is a registered broker dealer.
Hey, you want to smell like a zero? What does that mean? Well, I'm going to tell you. In a clinical study, men who showered with soap and used Mando whole body deodorant in their pits had an odor score of zero after 12 hours. That means no odor. That's why I love it. I hate when you put on deodorant and you're like, oh, my pits smell great. And then an hour later, you smell like an alley cat. I don't want that. Because the other thing that they did a study on is men who showered with just soap had an armpit odor score of 8 out of 10 after 12 hours. Big odor. So this is why we introduced Mando from the makers of Lumi deodorant. Mando is clinically proven to control odors for 72 hours. It doesn't matter where you stink. It could be your pits, your package, your feet, and beyond. You got to make the switch to Mando whole body deodorant, and you're going to smell like a zero every day. They sent this man, and I was like, all right, let me test it out. Let me see. No stink. New customers will get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code and link. You got to use that code BIGTHING at shopmando.com. That's shopmando.com. Use the code BIGTHING at shopmando.com.
All right, thank you to our friends over at Robinhood and Mando. As I said, if you can, you have the means to, make sure you go visit one of our sponsors. Let me know if you do. Okay. Let's move on to this. We just watched this, guys. Crow, this new trailer. Now, we talked about this a little while ago on this show about how, and I still don't love the look of the Crow. You know, they had to kind of change it up a bit from the classic, almost like the Kiss look. And now it's different. And I didn't know what to expect from this trailer. This trailer was bonkers.
It was amazing.
Yeah, this trailer was bonkers.
I still agree the imagery is not for me because I like that he kind of mirrored like a traditional clown mime. Yeah. Like there was something unnerving about it being innocent and changed, whereas this look is just aggressive.
Yep.
So I don't know if that would be, you know, a problem for me. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's an innocence to it.
I understand. I was laughing because I could see you on your camera and I was like, oh yeah. Like, I mean, there is something about Sting when you were watching wrestling that you would go, oh yeah, and then I was like, yeah, Sting. Oh, that's not Sting. That's literally the Crow.
Yeah,
that's the Crow. That's why I laughed.
You know what's funny about that is Sting recently said, recently, he's like, oh, I actually wasn't based off of the Crow. It was based off of Kiss. And then there's actual footage of, and I love Sting, but there's actual footage of like Razor Ramon or Scott Hall saying that Sting hadn't seen Crow, but Scott Hall had recommended. He was a big movie. That's where he got Scarface was Razor
funny.
Ramon.
Right, right.
And he suggested the Crow to him, and that's where it came from. So it's like, come on, Sting. But yeah, it's like, that is the Crow. That is right there. Coy, can you bring that?
Yeah.
Just show that one. I love that's one of my favorites. Yeah, it's really, I love that. You should see the original, though, Winston, before you see the new one.
You think?
I wonder,
in the same way that you, with X-Men 97, that you...
That's true. We went at a different eyeline.
It just gives a different eyeline of
like, if I what is the first one that you see? I mean, that's true. You could always see this one first. I could just do
the controlled experiment.
You could see, what do you consider the Crow? Because right. If you see this as your foundation, you might have a different take altogether on...
And you could compare it after you see. You see this one first. Because what was interesting watching it with you, this trailer, was that you didn't really know too much about the story. So going into it...
Like, we had different pops.
We knew. Like when it was starting, and we're like, oh, this never gets easy, the beginning of that.
Yeah.
And
to this day, that scene with Shelley is one of the most painful.
It's rough.
It's hard to watch knowing. It's kind of like you said, knowing it's coming. It's still like that first movie is so good at making violence unpleasant. Right. I think a lot of times violence is fun. Like John Wick is fun violence.
Right.
But the Crow makes violence unpleasant until the Crow is doing it. And I think that's one of the most interesting.
Even then it's rough, but it's not.
There's something really interesting about violence where, and I talk about this all the time, so apologies, viewers, but like we've made sexuality and nudity and all those things the perversion, and we've made violence the accepted entertainment. Like we are entertained by violence and beheadings and punching and all these things, and like sex is natural and violence isn't. And it's really interesting. The Crow is one of my favorite examples of violence used, I think, well, because he's a character that is like the Punisher, but they frame violence so differently in that when violence is being done to the innocent, it feels awful. When things are being done to Eric and Shelley, it feels horrendous. But when he's getting revenge, the way they Alex Proey shoots it, the way that's written, all those things, you're suddenly like, this is vindictive vengeance. This violence feels deserved. And it's incredible because it's a flip of a switch. And I feel like a lot of times we make all violence celebrated, and I think that's dangerous. But I think a good movie shows where violence can be a negative and where vengeance is deserved. And I think The Crow's a great example.
Well, especially look, I'm not a big Rupert Sanders fan, but
trailer's great.
I'll tell you, this trailer was good. The way that they said it, and because I even like how they dove a little bit more into the lore, and they show. And I said it in our trailer reaction. It looked like the Sandman at one point, where it's like, okay, we're gonna let you go back, and here's what you got to do, and here's what you can accept now that you're going back. And in the original, it's just like you're just back.
Yeah.
And so a little bit more of that, depending on how they do it, you could now. On the same note, we could watch it and go.
Oh, why did they add that?
I wish they didn't add that scene.
Because in the original, it's interesting him trying to figure out what happened and him being disoriented. Right. And there's that communication with the Crow that isn't like they're talking, but there's a communication that is how he figures it out.
Right.
Like
he's got that little girl. He's got that little girl too that he talks to.
But the Crow is kind of like a spirit guide.
Right.
If he's got a human in the underground, that's kind of like, hey, that negates.
It depends.
We'll see how they do it.
It depends on how they do it. So, very interesting. But I'll tell you, I really enjoyed, all three of us really enjoyed the trailer more so than we thought. Like that's one of those things. I love being surprised like that. I love being surprised to where you're like, I don't know about this one.
I'm always happier to be pleasantly surprised than like not like something.
Right.
I mean, I think the reason why a lot of us have a bad taste in our mouth for reboots is because people keep doing them poorly.
Right.
So if you actually are going to do a reboot and you're going to do something that's so phenomenal that I'm like, this just expands my love for this.
Yeah.
And when you change genre correctly, this doesn't look the same as The Crow. It looks like a very different atmosphere. And I think that
it looks
like,
more John Wick.
It does. Yeah. And Mr. and Mrs. Smith is a remake of a Hitchcock movie. Mm. And then there's got a new remake on Amazon. And I think a lot of people forget the Angelina and Brad Pitt one is a Hitchcock film. Mm. So I think it's like when you think of that movie, now you think of the new one. It doesn't make the old one go away. But they didn't try to make another Hitchcock movie because that wasn't the goal of that movie.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't even
Mr. Mrs. Smith. Yeah, that's the point, right? Yeah. Like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, we think of an action movie because that's the one of our generation. There's a classic Hitchcock film that precedes it by 40 years. So if you make something that is new and it's different enough, then you get two great movies instead of trying to make one thing again. 50 years.
Comedy thriller.
Wow. Makes sense. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Now, comedy.
It's your new tidbit of the day.
Look at that. Okay. So thoughts on the trailer, guys? What'd you think? All right, let's do the last story, then Winston's got to get the hell out of here. Okay, so this is the last story. We covered this last week. We talked about the Zack Snyder interview on Joe Rogan. Well, DC writer Grant Morrison hits back at Justice League director Zack Snyder's comments about Batman killing. DC Comics writer Grant Morrison has shared his take on Zack Snyder's recent remarks about Batman's no-kill rule, arguing that it's a fundamental part of what makes Bruce Bruce. Last week, an interview with Zack Snyder was published, which saw the filmmaker justify his decision to have Ben Affleck's Dark Knight kill in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. The director, who had also had Superman defeat General Zod by snapping his neck in Man of Steel, His deconstruction of his point of view of superheroes and added, people are always like, Batman can't kill, so Batman can't kill his canon. And I'm like, okay, well, the first thing I want to do when you say that is I want to see what happens. He'd later go on to say, and they go, well, don't put him in a situation where he has to kill someone. And I'm like, well, that's just you protecting your god in a weird way, right? You're making your god irrelevant. Snyder's take on Batman's no kill rule has split options, and prolific comic book writer Grant Morrison has now shared a rebuttal. They're well-versed in what makes the Caped Crusader tick, having spent years writing the Heroes DC comic series. Morrison also introduced Damian Wayne Robin. I was reading how film director Zack Snyder thinks Batman should kill as part of the character's self-imposed mission to stop crime. If Batman killed his enemies, he'd be the Joker, and Commissioner Gordon would have to lock him up. That Batman puts himself in danger every night but steadfastly refuses to murder is an essential element of the character's magnificent, horrendous, childlike psychosis. They explain that fundamental to Batman's grandeur as a fictional adventure hero, is this not obvious? Okay, so Coy, this is pretty much everything that you just said last week. I mean, really,
yeah. Yeah. They tried to come for you too, bro. I saw it because we put an IG version of it out, and they were like, did you not see 89? Did you not see
just because Batman's killed before in other mediums doesn't mean it's relevant to make him do it again. Yeah, they're all else, like, they're all versions of a character. That's the beauty of an archetypal character. That doesn't mean it's the character. The problem is when you make the character different to that level, it no longer is that character. Like, it's literally as simple as that becomes a new character. If he doesn't kill the Joker, there is no yin and yang. I mean, like, that's the point, is he would never kill, and Joker should be killed. You're supposed to look at it morally and go, Batman has a view that I don't share. Let me understand him. Snyder's entire thing was, let me look at the morals. Let me dissect. And I like that Snyder does that. But in the case of Batman killing, it's not dissecting anything. It's being wrong. It's you don't get to dissect if you don't question it. If he goes, oh, he killed him, that's Punisher. He's got guns. Like, right. That's right. Not a character. It's the Crow. Like, the Batman's whole thing is that his parents were killed by guns. He won't kill. Batman using guns in general is insanely foolish to the character. And him killing is just him causing more hymns. He doesn't want anyone to ever feel like what he felt like in that alleyway.
Yeah.
He doesn't know these henchmen have children or not. If he's killing them, that takes away every bit of the fundamental of what Batman is.
One of the most powerful storylines, I would say, and it started off really wonky, obviously, the death of Jason Todd and all that, and that, like the voting in and barely won, etc., right? But I think one of the things, and I know it happened in some of the books, but it was done super well in Under the Red Hood, the animated movie, of him having a conversation being like, you didn't kill this freak, specifically him. I get you don't kill, but he took me. If he had killed me, I would go to the ends of the earth to put him in the ground. And it makes sense why Jason slips into that darkness, because he died, came back from the Lazarus. But there's all sorts of stuff there, right? The fact that Bruce tells Dick, tells Jason, tells everybody, no, because then we're no better. If you were going to challenge it, if you were going to give me in those movies that Bruce had a situation where he truly broke and that's who he is now, and then Superman inspires him to fix his code, that's one thing. That's not what you did. You just said screw it, he's just out here shooting people, as blowing up flamethrowers. Like, you didn't tell us anything. You just did it because you wanted to.
And the psychosis of Batman is essential, and I love what Morrison says, like his childlike psychosis. Batman isn't mentally well.
Right.
He doesn't use his money to solve problems. He uses his money to dress like a giant bat and beat up the mentally ill on the streets of Gotham. We need Batman to be someone to go like, hey, that's really cool. You're not good. Like, bro. And like, there's no, why I love Michael Keaton's Batman. He's not my Batman. I love Michael Keaton's Batman. But when I look at Michael Keaton, the psychosis is there. And when like they cut to him at the Oscars, in one frame, I was like, that's Batman. I personally think that you need someone that you're concerned about mentally. Mm-hmm. And that is why him having that line in the sand is so insane, because we know fundamentally Gotham would be safer if Joker was dead. We need to question his sanity. Also, the use of Snyder's, he's like, you're gods. The point of Batman is immortal among gods. It's a figure of speech, but him even considering Batman a god when there's an actual pantheon of gods is, to me, another fundamental misunderstanding of the character.
Well, it's because also that whole situation of, because he's with those gods and those gods actually revere him as a mortal, you have to separate him out in some form or fashion. And including the fact that when you look at Supes and Wonder Woman, It's a whole different thing in the sense of like kind of them pulling back because of the insane strength that they have and all that. Whereas as a human, if you're that terrified when you're fighting these type of villains, it's like, wow, you didn't. I would have killed them if I were in your shoes because my life is in danger. And yet somehow Bruce figures out a way to beat them to a pulp sometimes, but like still a lot.
And that's also the fun question of like, if someone's legs are broken, arms are broken, they're in a coma, is that better than just killing them? And we want that question of like, he's so psychotic, he thinks that they're having a pulse means that's better than killing them. Like literally Batman's broken people's legs and that, like,
that's left. Enough, but he's torturing them in that regard.
And that's way more psychotic than just taking someone out. So I really like Zach the Man. I really like the movies he built as an Elseworld, but I think that it's so detrimental that an entire generation think those the characters. Like the Jacob Elordi from Saltburn said he didn't want to play Superman because it's too dark of a character. Superman for an entire generation is too dark of a character. That is so horrible. So I just wish that Snyder fans understood that, yes, you love that character, and I appreciate you loving that character, but that's not the character. It's a version of the character that I personally think isn't the true one.
Well, he doesn't have much to say on the matter. So what do you guys think about it? Do you think any one of your thoughts, put them out there about if you agree with the stuff that there's one side of it is certainly doing debate and healthy debate. We hope happens here. And it has been so far. So make sure you do all that. I want to thank both Winston and Corey for joining us. Starting Winston. Winston, where can they find you?
Find me at the Swaggy Blurred on all the platforms, man. Come say what's up. I got some fun stuff popping up on them socials.
Find me at Coy Jondro, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and you can find me in theaters in October now instead of November watching Venom The Last Dance. Best subtitle I've had in a long time. So excited about that last dance.
Not sure how long you can find him on TikTok, though. So make sure you also, if you haven't already, subscribe to this channel. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. If you are into the UAP phenomenon, we have an entire news channel every day. We put out a new story that is Down to Earth with Christian Harloff. Make sure you subscribe today. And thanks for joining us. And we'll see you on the flip side. Bye.